This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. I'm Paula. Bill Russell, of course, is here. And we are with Dr. Ricky Ott. She has written about the effects, the long-term effects, of the oil spill known as the Exxon Valdez. Now, a lot of us just in common parlance think Exxon Valdez. I must say, when I drive down the street, if I see a gas station that says Exxon behind it, I always think Valdez. But that's not always the case. And Bill, we'll come back to all of those scientists who got trained. But isn't there something, again, about this attention? Why don't we think Exxon Valdez? Why are there still cars going to the Exxon station when we know that this organization was right smack in the middle of a major catastrophic event?
This is one of the things that I speak to at the end of the book, is that what choices we can make as individuals in our everyday life that will affect help make our world a better place. And one of the things, of course, is don't buy from companies that don't match our values. And you can do this several ways. This is sort of the voting with your pocketbook idea. And again, why do we have to wait every 4 years, you know, for a presidential election to express our democratic rights? We should be doing this every day with our pocketbooks. And one of the things about don't buy from companies that don't express our values, you can do this in two ways. You can go to a different gas station. You can don't buy the products from these companies. But also, if you have stock, you can look for socially responsible investing. And so again, this is paying attention to what's going on in our world, what these companies are doing, that we are supporting every time we go and buy something from some company.
One of the people who has a blurb on your book is David Rockefeller Jr., who is known as an environmentalist, and he says of himself, "I'm an Exxon stockholder." So even as a stockholder, one can have an effect.
Can influence. That's absolutely right. Now, I want to get back to Bill's question before the break, because that's actually the crux of the book. The reason I was concerned about the cleanup workers being sick was twofold. One, because these are people in my community that worked out on the cleanup. People were calling me on the phone saying, do you think that, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, they're still calling me today, that these respiratory problems that I have go back to then. But it's also because I realize that the cleanup workers are a super exposed group, just like the Gulf War vets. What can we learn from these workers that would have implications for us as public health? And I was pretty shocked to discover that out on the cleanup, Exxon was conducting a worker safety program to make sure that the workers were safe. But some of the things that Exxon was not telling these workers was that the federal health safety standards for oil mist, this is OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Act.
Mist.
This is the Occupational Safety and Health Act that sets these safety standards for workers, for general public. The OSHA safety standards for oil mist were actually based on mineral oil, which is a highly refined, relatively non-toxic compound that you put on babies' bottoms if they have diaper rash. The OSHA safety standard for PAH aerosols was actually based on particulate dust, not the ultra-hazardous PAHs. The reason for this is that OSHA is pretty much outdated with its risk assessment program. It sets risk assessment sort of like what the scientists do for the wildlife with these, you know, beakers. OSHA looks at one chemical at a time and sets risk on that. So when confronted with a complex mixture of chemicals like oil mists, it's a suite of different oil compounds, or PAHs, again, a suite of compounds, you have to choose a surrogate. There are no safety standards for actually those compounds. And so we chose these totally unrealistic standards. The third thing that Exxon didn't tell the workers was that the OSHA safety standards are based on a 40-hour work week. And of course, this was an emergency response, and the workers did shift work 80, 100 hours a week, which put them all basically at risk of overexposure to these carcinogenic and dangerous, hazardous chemicals. Now, you ask the question, Bill, I don't understand why they're not hazardous. And the irony of this is that about two weeks, March 6, 1989, OSHA changed the regulations so that oil spill cleanups were declared hazardous waste cleanup. So here we have something that we use in our cars that's not a hazardous waste until it spills. And then it is a hazardous waste if you're going to respond to it, which of course is crazy. So I am doing this research realizing that Exxon has clinical data showing 6,722 workers actually reported respiratory distress to Exxon, and Exxon treated them all as colds and flu and didn't report them to the state officials. And because they weren't, I mean, you get better from a cold and flu. If it's something else, maybe you don't. And that's kind of what we're seeing with these cleanup workers. So I started researching PAHs. What exactly are they? I found, I mean, in terms of public health, and it's totally surprised me to find that the United States Environmental Protection Agency had listed 22 of these PAHs found in crude oil on its list of super ultra hazardous to humans, along with lead, dioxin, mercury, PCBs, and DDT. This was in 1999. I had never heard anything about this. Now, these other chemicals on this list, none of these do we put in the gas tanks of our cars. None of them. We used to put in lead, but there was a huge 60-plus year argument that ultimately the public health advocates prevailed, and in 1989, lead was taken out of the gas tanks of our cars. What this essentially means is that we need to take the gas out of our gas tanks as well. This list is called the Persistent Bioaccumulative Toxic List. The characteristics of chemicals on this list, which now includes oil, are that these chemicals persist in the environment for a very long time. They don't break down very readily. They accumulate, they build up in the tissues of humans as well as wildlife to levels that cause harm, toxic. And in this case, the symptoms manifest as reproductive and developmental problems, central nervous system problems, and cancers and genetic impacts. And this is what, of course, the environmental medicine doctors are seeing. Environmental medicine is a new branch of medicine which has emerged pretty much into these last 15 years, 16 years. And to repeat, they have identified the petrochemical problem based on studies on Gulf War vets and are now seeing this expressed as this epidemic of public health problems, asthma, depression, and chemical sensitivities, to kind of bring this full circle.
We're not going to exhaust the content of this book because it's a thick book, and you can sort of treat it as a reference work, and it cites, it leads you to lots of other references. But there's another piece of this that I don't want to, and you alluded to it. What happened in Alaska is a disaster by all accounts, and I think everybody would agree. The nature of that disaster, I think there's still arguments about. And it's easy to get outraged about the behavior of Exxon and the failures of the government and a whole bunch of other things. However, you point out, bless you, that the oil spill, the equivalent to the oil spill, is something all of us do all day, every day, that the runoff from cities into the waterways, into the estuaries, into the Gulf, into the ocean.
Into the water table.
And into the water table and lots of other places is a constant insult to the environment, and it is something that we all participate in. So it is not sufficient for us to stand back and feel, cross our arms in front of us and or shake our fingers in the face of Exxon, though I don't suggest that's a bad idea. That we also need to be looking in mirrors.
And this is back to the pay attention theme. And for me, as the writer, this was my final surprise in writing this book, was I asked the question, well, all right, now I know that PAHs are a public health threat. Where are they coming from? And I fully expected that answer to be the tanker spills that we have all around our planet. And instead, I found a study by the National Research Council, published in 2003, that found that 92%, so this is like the lion's share of PAHs that are in our environment, are coming from burning fossil fuels, mostly in the tailpipes of our automobiles, but also in our power plants for electrical generation, coal or oil. And to me, this was a total surprise, a total shock. But then I realized, all right, this is actually also good news, because we are the real superpower. There are so many millions of us. And if we can get educated and get on board, we, by individually reducing our fossil fuel appetite, in our homes, in our workplaces, in our cars, in our choices that we make every day, we can actually start reducing these PAHs. I mean, we are the ones that put them into the environment. We can change our habits and take them out. And I want to hastily add that even though this book, I wrote it so that academics could use it, and there's a lot of references in it, I have a lot of people telling me, thank you for writing it in a way that I can read it. And these are people who aren't lawyers and who aren't doctors and who aren't scientists. I wrote this by interviewing people. I interviewed over 50 people, sick workers, their medical doctors, lawyers, the wildlife biologists, so that each chapter you feel like you're out with the person in the field cleaning up the spill, or you feel like you're out looking at sea otters and trying to figure out why the pups are dying. And so it's actually kind of a journey of discovery each chapter.
Lots of stories. This is Dr. Ricky Ott. The book to which we are all referring is Sound Truth and Corporate Myths. It is published by Dragonfly Sisters. And we'll all be back in a moment when we'll start by saying, so what does Exxon say about this? We'll be back in a moment with the Paula Gordon Show.